You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Because what's interesting is we talk about the people that have been pivotal in my life. Maybe it's kind of a two-way street. Maybe you don't know either when you are being pivotal in somebody else's life, right? Which is something really interesting.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Thanks so much for joining us again, and I'm so excited today to be chatting with Leonardo Murillo. Leonardo is the Principal Partner Solutions Architect at Weaveworks and founder of Cloud Native Architects, as well as being the former CTO at Quinyx. He's also a DevOps Institute Ambassador and the Costa Rica Chapter President, CNCF speaker, and community organizer. Leo brings wide-ranging industry perspective with over 20 years of experience building technology and leading teams all the way from startups to Fortune 500s. Leo, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for inviting me, Jason. This is great. It's really fun and an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, we gave you a bit of a warning that we're going to get human on today's podcast. So should we just jump right in?
Let's jump right in. That's what I'm expecting.
So, awesome. Awesome. Roll up your sleeves. Well, you're wearing short sleeves, so that'll be easy.
Done.
Let's get right to it. So I know that, you know, with your background, clearly you've been done quite a bit in your career, but how did it all begin? You know, did you know at an early age that you wanted to get in technology? How did you start?
Well, I guess I didn't know I wanted to get into technology. It just happened. But it was this overwhelming absorption that happened at an early age. And what I mean by that is it wasn't a choice. It wasn't a conscious decision. So it all started when I was 13 years old. And I didn't think at that time, oh, this is going to be my life, and I'm going to dedicate myself to technology, and I'm going to have a good job 20 years down the road. It wasn't like that, you know. It was just completely impossible to abstain curiosity the moment that I got my first computer. And it served more than just a kind of like technology role. It became the window to a world. It became a means to socialize, because I wasn't really social in high school. And it was kind of like the beginning of the rest of my life without me really knowing about it. You know, it wasn't by strategy. It was a very good accident that happened.
I like that. A very good accident is a interesting way to describe it. So you were 13 when you started the second BBS network in Costa Rica, and that led to job possibilities, right?
That's right. And so for anybody that doesn't know, like, BBSs are systems that predated the internet and basically dialed up to get on them. And after school, I had my computer and I had a modem on it. So I don't even remember how I realized there was this thing called BBS. Like, there's a lot of gaps in kind of like my exploration that I really know exactly how I learned some things. They just, I don't know how I found them, but I found them. And I ran the BBS. This is pre-internet. And at that time, there was, if you wanted to get on the internet, there was a single place that you could actually log in. And that was in the biggest college in the country. They were the only ones that had internet at the time. And that was changing. Somebody came in from California, actually, and he wanted to start the first commercial ISP in Costa Rica. So long story short, I was running my BBS, and somebody connected to the BBS one afternoon and said, you know what, we need somebody that can do what you did, because we're starting the first commercial ISP in the country. And I asked my mom where to take the bus. And I don't know if she was very supportive or very irresponsible, but she let me go. And I went over, and I was hired as assistant to the network administrator. And that's kind of like how my professional career got started. And that's
at 13.
And I started to make money. And that was life changing. Like that was the point in time where I said, you know what, now I can do whatever I want. I have money. And what's funny is my family actually, like I come from a relatively modest family. Like I never had any money. And it took a lot of effort for my grandfather, because I didn't live with my dad, for my grandfather to buy me that computer. But it really changed my life. And it actually brought kind of like financial benefits, you know, like financial freedom to me and my family eventually. So yeah, it was kind of like a little revolution in my life.
You know, I'm always inspired by hearing the stories, because we're relatively the same age. And when I was 13 and all this was going on in your life, I was making prank calls through the modem. So I realize how I've now wasted everything. It's inspiring. It's amazing that you were doing all that back then.
And it's funny because, you know, I always talk to people as, so here in Costa Rica, we have no military and we live. So let me tell you some things about hardship in life. I didn't enjoy high school. I was like really badly bullied in high school. And I think all that difficulty were drivers for me to kind of find this thing that changed my life. And the reason I'm talking about military is because if we think about Costa Rica and other countries and hardship as a means to progress, I was talking the other day about for the fact that, for example, we've never really had any wars here. We have never gone through military training. And I actually find that there's value. I mean, I'm not saying I want military and I want any wars, just for the record, right? But what I'm saying is that through those experiences of some cultures, there's been a lot of progress made. And there are components that promote growth in people. And we were talking about, for instance, like even weather, right? Here in Costa Rica, we have 12 hours of sunlight day, kind of like throughout the year. We have kind of like 22 degrees Celsius, which is, I don't know what in Fahrenheit, like maybe 80 or something.
80, I think. Yeah.
All year long.
Are you doing this to rub it in? No, I'm just kidding.
So we have beautiful sunshine. Like it's a great place to be. Where are you, Jason? No, just kidding. Yeah. But point being, that means, for instance, we never had to solve the architectural problems that some cultures have to solve whenever they build windows to keep the freezing cold out. Point being, I think there was a component of hardship at my 13 years old that drove me in this direction, right? And I think it's kind of like valuable to point out how what would have been perceived, like we were playing around making prank calls when you were 13, I was probably in a whole lot more distress. I was probably not happy and not having fun until I found this thing that really fulfilled me, right? And it ended up being good. So even if there's hardship, it's if effectively focused and effectively driven, or by chance somehow exposes you to something that's meaningful, it's gonna end up all right.
Yeah, I always talk about it. I think for me, you know, that thing was music. You know, my parents were divorced when I was five, so I never, like, you know, it was pretty tough. I wouldn't say that I went through any, you know, any hardship, but I would say that was tough. And, you know, I think my escape was always going towards music or going mm-hmm. towards something like that, or sports, you know, was another outlet. But, mm-hmm. You know, for those who I'm talking to on the podcast, obviously there was not everyone, but many people, seem to have found that release in learning and in discovery. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish I went that direction. It would have been much more productive for me now. but yeah, I guess it's whatever your interest levels are. Did you have anyone that you kind of could relate to, anyone who kind of gave you advice early on in your career that helped to path shape that path for you as you continued on?
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Because when you look, like, you know, like what they say, like hindsight is 2020, right? And if you look back, I see over the course of my life and over the course of my career that just as there were like pivotal decisions that I made without real awareness of the fact that I was making a choice that would define the rest of my life to some degree, there were people that also served that role. So I worked as a network administrator in this ISP for a while. There was a client, and it's people that you remember by name. His name was John Manners. If I would be surprised if he ever hears this, but if he does,
John, if you're listening,
you changed my life, man. John Manners, he was, so at that time, this was the first ISP. The country didn't really have a commercial viability. Like there weren't, like, we're a tiny little country. We're 7 million people, I think, overall, altogether in the country. There wasn't like this millions of people banging on anybody's door to get on the internet, right? But the reason that this expat that came to Costa Rica wanted to start this business was because there was this huge expat community in Costa Rica of mostly senior citizens that came over to Costa Rica to retire, and they heard about this thing, the internet, and they wanted to get in, and they had money and they had time. More money and time than any actual Costa Rican had at that point in time. So this person, John Manners, he told me that I could be making a whole lot more money if I worked with the actual kind of like community of expats that were living here, as opposed to kind of like assistant network administrator at the ISP, which is funny because this is kind of like where my career started. And we're in a DevOps show, right? So DevOps is about development and operations, and kind of like the profile is one that has kind of like a relative wide ranging surface of experience, right? And at that point in time, I think that type of situation began to occur. Because I went from assistant network administrator to starting working with expats, helping them kind of like support their computers, right? Like if I think about now, like I would have never imagined that it was something relevant, but it exposed me to a different type of reality right now. And it was in their homes. So I came from this kind of like small home, you know, like very modest, into the condos that this foreigners were able to purchase that were kind of like way beyond anything that I had ever seen.
Like a culture shock.
It was kind of like, what is this life? Yeah. And what is this, right? So different to anything that I've experienced before. And I started working with them, and that actually did provide me more money. This guy, John, he invested in the stock market, and that's kind of like he came down here. He was really poorly impacted by Lehman Brothers when the whole housing bust and whatnot. But he came down here and he was just living off his investments. So I learned about the stock market, like a 15-year-old kid from Costa Rica learning about all these things. I didn't speak English then really well. I learned English because I worked with them. So it opened up the world to me that I guarantee you had. So people, had that person not connected to the BBS and offered me that job without knowing I was a 13-year-old kid, had John Manners not offered this idea of kind of like opening up the PC club, they were called, of all these older American citizens in the country, my life would be different. And there's kind of like this cadence that I can see over time. There's always somebody that without realizing, open up a door and define the path. So for anybody that's out there listening to this, I'm very grateful for those people in my life. You know, I it's funny because sometimes, most of the time, you never get to say thanks, right? Because you realize like way into the future. I don't even know if you're alive. So yeah, those are the people. There's a bunch of them.
I know, and you don't realize the impact that they're having until much later. Is there any advice that you would give to someone who might be 13 right now and playing with the BBS? Well, no, but <they're>, they're a little behind. No, what would you say to someone who's maybe now, you know, there is a DevOps field. I know there wasn't when you were coming up, but you know, who might be interested in getting into DevOps, that you would say to them, like, what should they do for their path? What things should they look out for? Where did you have any pitfalls along the way? Couldn't have all been easy, you know, once you realized that you had this passion for something.
I think what I would advise, and it might not be DevOps, it's find your, so for those that are looking, never stop, like let curiosity be your guide, right? Let curiosity be your driver, and find that thing for which you're insatiable. So that's kind of like what I would say to the searcher, and what I would say to everybody else, even the searcher, because what's interesting is we talk about the people that have been pivotal in my life. Maybe it's kind of like a two-way street. Maybe you don't know either when you are being pivotal in somebody else's life, right? Which is something really interesting. And I think if you become aware of the fact, like right now, maybe I am being pivotal in somebody's life because what I just said, right? If you realize that you can, that you are, that we all are that agent of change, it's a matter of kind of like always serving others, right? Like opening up opportunities, giving ideas, kind of like sharing yourself. And if everybody goes by those two tenets, right? Seek endlessly until you find it, for kind of like this insatiable source of curiosity, and give yourself to others because you might be their pivotal moment. I think you got a pretty solid guarantee that good stuff is going to happen, wouldn't you say?
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
That was, I think that was great. I hope people listen to that, because there are so many pitfalls in life. There are so many roadblocks. There are so many people or things potentially standing in your way. Sometimes it's kind of trust your gut, right? It's like what you teach your kids. It's like, you know, just because the blocks fell down doesn't mean it's over. You know, you just start again and build them back up, right? It's as simple as some of those early exercises. Maybe it's not that simple, but you know, but the concept is.
No, but it is. And matter of fact, I think that's another very, very valuable piece of advice that you just kind of like shared there. Embrace the, I don't even want to call it failure, because I don't think it's failure. It's just kind of like a stepping stone to the process, right? But embrace, there's this saying, kind of like trust the process, right? Don't fall. And that's interesting, because we were talking about how this was not a conscious choice of mine, and likely not a conscious choice of a lot of the people that have been for 20 plus years in the industry, in an industry that didn't exist when they started, right? I wasn't looking for the outcome. I wasn't looking for the eventual return on my investment, right? I was just embracing the moment and the instant and the passion and curiosity that this moment provided, right? And even in failures, there's this, I remember I had one, it was a 386 computer, how it all started. And I had a 50 megabyte hard drive. And you know what I did to begin with? I started, it was Windows 3.1, I think, which was kind of like top of the line. And I started actually trying command by command, all the commands that I found in the computer one by one. And there was one of them that was, if I recall correctly, called disk dupe. Let's see if that's the name. No, what was the name? There was a command that allowed you to compress your hard drive. I had no idea what compression was. I had no idea what anything was. I just ran the command and my 50 megabyte hard drive became like an 80 megabyte hard drive. And I'm like, this is magic. Like, this is the best thing that I've ever done in my life. But as with everything that's compressed, the computer became slow as hell and eventually kind of like just broke down. That experience, the debugging, the solving of that problem, when I knew I had no choice, like I didn't have anybody around me that could help me because nobody knew anything at the time. My grandfather probably had spent all his savings into getting me that computer, right? So I had to figure it out. And that experience, I think, just galvanized how passionate about how passionate I was about kind of like this that I found, and the pleasure in problem solving, which I think is a huge component of kind of like finding that passion, right? When the struggle becomes enjoyable, I think that's kind of like another, I think you probably a piece of advice is you got to watch for those signs, right? To know you found your path, right? You want to enjoy the struggle. You want to be completely you cannot satisfy yourself with exploration. You got to keep going.
Yeah. It's kind of like what drives entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. When the struggle becomes, what did you say? When the struggle becomes enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's great quote. Go with that. Like put that on a t-shirt. No, that is such a good way to sum it up, because I find that with a lot of entrepreneurs and talking to them, there's this like the sweat equity that you put into something, especially that you're mm-hmm. truly passionate about. And, you know, you find that with entrepreneurs who work like the majority of their time is spent working or putting something, you know, into what they're trying to build. And sometimes you question, you know, why am I doing it? Like that's an easy place to go for a lot of people who are putting so much time and effort into something. And when things get screwed up, you know, because eventually we're all going to fail. And failure, like you said, it shouldn't necessarily be looked at as a bad thing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs will tell you that failure is a good thing, as long as, you know, you keep correcting and problem solving and get to that next place. And that's how you become successful, is you have to learn from all your failures. I'm assuming, do you find that in DevOps?
Definitely. And I think, see, the thing about failure and overcoming resistance to the temporary state of displeasure that arises almost, I guess, naturally out of failure, because it's not, even if you think about fear, for example, or pain, a fearless person is not one that doesn't experience fear. We all experience fear. It's kind of like the choices made in response to that emotion, right? Same thing with pain, same thing with discomfort. And the reason I point that out is because DevOps, as it has evolved into its principles and kind of like way of doing things. Well, this is what the podcast is all about. It's all about humans, right? It's about how humans interact, how the patterns of behavior that are cemented onto people need to change, and the fear and uncertainty that change produces. And for those that are promoting that change, how do you become the source of confidence? When we're talking about pivotal people, right? How do you become that pivotal component in an organization that is going through this change, right? So I think there's a lot of commonality to calling the adoption of DevOps, because it's also an exploration. Matter of fact, like when this whole thing started, the DevOps has changed, and the level of understanding, the level of adoption, and the meaning of it has evolved over the years, and at a dramatic rate of change, right? Of evolution, of cementing, right? Solidifying, fulfilling. So there is definitely a component that resonates with all this personal search and this kind of personal struggles with that which an organization as a system experiences as they're going through this process. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. And there's a lot of choice. We've been talking a lot about choice, and kind of how you kind of found DevOps by accident. And you had shared with me earlier, when we were talking, that you have children, and sometimes you wonder about choice, right? It's as a parent, I have a 3.5-year-old. I think about that too. You always think about your kid's future, right? And the choices that they're going to make. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. And, how do you think that with your DevOps mindset and your background, how do you see yourself kind of applying that to your children?
All I tell you, Jason, is that I wish I understood children and family with the, qualities that I understand technology. I don't. Like, it's hard. Like, I was just talking to a friend of mine today, because I have three kids, and my two older kids are from my first marriage. My baby is from my second marriage, and the two older kids are just fed up with a baby in the house. Period. You know what I'm saying? They can't leave their toys around, and everybody's saying, don't leave their toys around because the baby's gonna choke, and be quiet because the baby's sleeping, and they're just fed up. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's like, yeah, parenting is so tough. And parenting is tough. And we're joking that I don't know what happens next. I don't know what happens. Like, if there's an afterlife, if there's rebirth, like, we don't know what the hell is gonna happen. But if there is rebirth, I would leave myself like a little note saying, you know what, kids, great, boundless love, awesome. You did it once. Try something different this time. It's tough, man. Super tough. But hardship, right? And how in my grown-up mind and kind of conscious awareness, I realize, oh, hardship is good. It makes you grow. And yet, with children, you're, as a parent, you're always trying to kind of like reduce or at least manage and control the level of hardship that they're exposed to. So how do you balance that? And how do you promote them finding that which I was lucky enough to find? Because it was about luck, right? And this is kind of like something that we also spoke briefly before the show. Luck, like it wasn't planned. It was a good accident. And I don't feel comfortable kind of like just being the parent that leaves their kid's success, his kid's success to luck, right? Who would be like, go for it, like try it out. It's difficult to find what one can do to promote them finding this one thing that they're very passionate about. Are you familiar with the concept of Ikigai? Have you ever heard that?
No.
So, and I might be kind of like butchering the concept, but anyways, there is this concept called Ikigai that's
from, well, I don't know what it is, so you could butcher it and I won't know.
But we got a, I don't know, what is it, 10 million people hearing this?
Yes, I think we have a Super Bowl size audience for this episode.
All right, so if anybody knows Ikigai better, please put it in the comments and talk back to us. But there's actually a book that I bought, I haven't read it. Not because I'm an avid reader, but that's a different story. Ikigai says that you need to find that which is, so there's that which you're passionate about, that which the world needs, and that which makes money. And the realization of your life is going to be in the center where those three things collide. You have to find that which you're passionate about, which you can make money, and the world needs it. How do you help your kids find that, right? When the world changes so rapidly, and what we're talking about, right? Like, maybe it's all about exploration. You gotta let them try in and out whatever they feel like. But then there's the concept of, well, first of all, our initial response to most things that are painful is to flight, not fight. So there is kind of like resistance, and persistence is something that we, I guess, all are born with some degree of persistence, but it's something that you train over time, right? It's something that you, at least that's kind of like my take, you build up through conscious effort your ability to persist in hardship. You learn that. Some, you know, like no kid is just gonna expose themselves to painful things and keep at it because they wanna become persistent. They won't do that. So how do you identify how much exploration to provide? How do you identify when what they have chosen no longer to do is because it's not their ikigai, it's not their passion, or is it that they're abandoning it because they've experienced some pain, and now it's the opportunity to teach them to persist? I don't have any answer to that, Jason. I just know those are very challenging problems, and those three kids neither came with a manual. I've Googled everything and nothing has helped. I don't know.
I do a lot of reading, and there's the one person who I follow quite a bit. My wife, you know, turned me on to her, is Janet Lansbury, and she's really great with various teaching methods. And she has a site, I think it's like Raising Children Who Want to Come Home, which is a great concept, because that's something that we always talk about, is that, you know, at the end of the day, all you care about, or all you should care about, is that they're happy, healthy, and they don't blame you for screwing them up. Right? I think that's like all parents, like in the back of their head, you're like, oh, God, I hope I don't screw this one up. And I think that resonated with us. I think there's so many ways you can go with that, because there's the part of me that's thinking, as you're saying it, it's like, well, I don't want to be the one to push my kid to do something that they end up hating, you know, just because I want them to push. But then at the same time, it is that the blocks fell down, build them back up concept, where, you know, that we all teach them. It's like, you can be frustrated, you can feel your feelings, but at the end of but then regroup and then try it again, right? Because otherwise, how are we ever going to succeed in life if you don't have those basic, you know, that fundamental learned, is that you need to be persistent. But that's hard. That's something I still, even today, I think we all struggle with that.
All struggle. And you know what I was thinking? Like, I always think about two kind of like scenarios in my life. One is, I don't think there's ever been a programming language that I haven't started writing that I'm like, what is this terrible thing? Who came up with this stupid nonsense, right? Like every, when I learned Python, I'm like, tabs, it's like identing, defining blocks, that what the hell is identation got to do with a language, right? Now I love Python. Whenever I started learning TypeScript, I'm like, how the hell are you applying classes and object-oriented concepts to a functional language. It's unheard of, right? Now I really like TypeScript. Everything that I've explored new, there's always usually some opinion that as I dig deeper, I realize its value. And I don't remember who said this, but somebody said that everything is interesting and everything is amazing as long as you go deep enough, right? And at the surface, things tend to be boring, things tend to be, you know, unfamiliar, but the bigger you deep, the more value and the more discovery and the more awe you find, right?
There's a level of appreciation, right? For as you learn something more and more, you appreciate it more, I think.
Exactly. So how do you keep that balance, right? Like, I want to try Kung Fu, Daddy. I want to play guitar. I want to play drums. A month into it, I don't no longer want to play drums. Now I want to play, I don't know, saxophone. Have you, like, where is that line? Like, when do you say yes and when do you say no? It's very difficult.
Yeah, and that's tough.
You know, and for example, I think about when I learned to drive. When I learned to drive kind of like at a relatively old age, I was like 18 or 19 years old when I learned to drive because my parents didn't have a car. And I actually learned to drive when I was able to buy me my first car. And the first few weeks were just awful. Like, I would have taken the bus anytime because it was just this uncomfortable feeling of having to drive this. And if I had to park, I was like, no way, man, I'm taking the bus.
Come up here to Queens and try to park.
I can't imagine what it is for you guys. So if I had been a kid, I would have said, no, you know what? I don't want a car. I want to keep taking the bus. It feels fun. It's comfortable. I laugh with my buddies in the bus. But that would have, if I had made that choice, that would have very much hindered a lot of possibility in my life, right? So I think it's very tricky, not to mention the fact that the world is changing so fast that I don't even know what we're preparing our kids for, right? Like, the world that they're going into is going to be dramatically different to anything you and I maybe can even think about, right? Yeah. So you know what? I think we've gotten to the bottom of it. You know the one thing that you can do? Love them endlessly.
That's it. And push them to space exploration. I think that's going to be the next.
Man, there's space exploration. That's
the next one, yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. I mean, we could talk about this all day. Maybe we should have another podcast just on this topic.
No, we got it. It's all new series. The kids of DevOps.
The kids of
DevOps. DevOps.
I love that. The parenting for DevOps. A parenting with a DevOps mind. All right, so we got deep there. Let's bring it back to light. So to kind of wrap things up, what makes you excited about DevOps right now? Where do you see things going and what gets you excited for the future?
I think just technology gets me excited for the future. I think this is a phenomenal time to be in the industry. I think it's a phenomenal time of accelerated change. And what gets me excited is the uncertainty of the future. Like what we were talking about, right? We don't know what the future is going to be like for our kids. I love the fact that we're at this dawn of the space age again. I think that's phenomenal. I think it's phenomenal that we're at this dawn of the AI age, maybe. Who knows?
And
who
it's
knows?
It's a little scary right? If you're. Yeah.
I'm reading this book. I forget the name. I don't have it nearby. It's called Super Intelligence. So for anybody that's interested in kind of like that type of interesting out of the ordinary thinking, it's called Super Intelligence: Paths, Dangers, and Strategies by Nick Bostrom. That's one of my current active reads about halfway through. It's very interesting, and we don't know what it's going to be like, so that excites me. The uncertainty of the breadth of possibility that I see us at the brink of.
No, I always think Skynet with AI, and I should probably not, but that's where my mind goes. And it scares me sometimes.
It could be scary. It could be like, I have no idea what it's going to be. Like, read that book, man. It's going to freak you out and it's going to keep, like, it's both going to freak you out and it's going to give you kind of like a positive outlook.
We just can't build a robot that looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Please.
All right. Well, hey, Leo, this has been awesome. I appreciate you getting, you know, really human, getting deep with us, sharing. You're probably hearing my child screaming right now. So there you go.
It's a daughter. Son.
Yeah. It's yeah. My girl. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. Well, I appreciate it. And good luck with your three. And, and yeah, we'll catch up again. Now I feel like I have a friend in Costa Rica, so you, I really appreciate it.
And if you want the year-round 80 degrees, it's always happening, man. You're invited.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, so thank you, Jason. And this,
thank
this
you so much,
great,
Leo.
And a lot of fun. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Appreciate it. Yeah, and so this is the time of the podcast where I'm going to beg you to ask questions, because I really am. I want to hear from our listeners. I want to hear what you have to think, what you have to say, rather, and you know, ask questions about the show, ask questions about our guests. We'll try and get them back on, or we'll try and get them to answer a few of your questions. So if you want to dive deeper into what Leo was talking about, please go ahead and ask us. And again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this the same as I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. And until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human, live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.